All righty. Thank you very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Monday edition, February 27th. Another beautiful day out there. The boys from Chicago Inno are here. A little bit later, Randy Schaefer will stop by. She writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. And there's actually a business relations firm, a law firm that deals with big businesses, creating memos for them to prepare to be singled out by President Trump. You know, the president has done that with a few companies, and so these people are working on it ahead of time. We'll talk to Randy about that. Then, and then we'll get all dressed up for Mardi Gras. The people from Chicago Costume will be here. And actually, I want to talk to them mostly about, they've got a side business, I don't know if side's the right term, of a mascot business where they create mascots for school teams or different corporations and things like that. So that's coming up as well on the Biz Lunch. I don't know, what would the Chicago Inno mascot be? Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke are here.
Maybe like a really terrible big old like foam smartphone,
like big googly eyes on a smartphone.
I think it would be a motorized luggage.
Yeah,
no, it would just be someone in a cowboy hat riding motorized luggage everywhere.
You dance with the date what brung you.
I think that works.
So let's talk. One of the stories that's been in Chicago Inno recently is the story by Jim, actually, about the gaming industry in Illinois. And I, you know, I hadn't thought of it until I read it. I think there are 16 schools in the state that offer some sort of gaming degree, and it's kind of paying off for us here.
Exactly, yeah. Illinois is actually the fifth largest state in terms of video game employment. Almost 6,000 folks here are in the video game industry in some capacity.
Is it so there are a number of companies here who are actually, I mean, is it known outside of Chicago? Yeah, go to Chicago, go to Illinois. They've got some good stuff going on.
So that's the thing. I don't think it is very well known at all. And that's what was surprising to me. There are 97 video game companies here in the state of Illinois. And there's obviously a lot concentrated in Chicago. But even when you go further downstate into Springfield and Champaign, you get a lot of companies that have spun out of the University of Illinois who are down there. Electronic Arts has an office down in Springfield as well. So some of the larger players kind of have a presence in the state too.
Yeah, in the same way, when you think about Chicago invented the cell phone, right? When you talk about, yes, we have this new tech ecosystem and it's emerging and growing, and then you realize like, oh wow, we still have some real legacy. Like, Chicago is responsible for Mortal Kombat, one of the most famous and arguably the most influential video game ever. So there is real kind of pillar history here. And because Mortal Kombat was created, that's also the trunk of the tree when it comes to this gaming industry. Like Motorola, how as it started to kind of break down and fizzle, a lot of hardware engineers started their own little company. So the reason why we have this mini hardware boom is directly because of Motorola. Mortal Kombat is responsible for a lot of this video game energy because it attracted so many video game engineers and enthusiasts. And then when it starts to go in one direction, these guys want to try something new, and they stay here and they build.
And so if the mom is yelling down to their kid in the basement who wants to be a video game designer, it's not a bad gig, is it?
No, and like your point earlier, I mean, there are 16 university programs where you can learn to develop software for video games in the state of Illinois. Lots of different programs people can take advantage of, and those are people who are going to go to school here, finish their degree, stay here, launch a startup here that's based in video games.
Yeah, Jim and I, we find ourselves contradicting ourselves a lot of the time when we define the tech ecosystem. Like, on one hand, we want to play this important role where Chicago Tech is really good at B2B software, and that's not super cool and fun to talk about, but we really want to have the city kind of like lean into that.
Right.
It is awesome that we are the B2B tech boom town of the country. But on the other hand, I also don't want it to seem like that's all we do, because there is this video game and really cool B2C and fun social startups coming out here. So yes, like, we are very good at B2B, but there are the kind of quirky fun things to tech.
You mentioned Motorola a couple times, and now Motorola has partnered with Amazon, right? If you have a Motorola phone now, you'll be talking to Alexa?
Yeah, so Motorola's smartphones, instead of building its own AI or digital assistant, it's going to have Alexa built in also.
So who wins from that, Amazon or Motorola?
So it's probably going to be a mutually beneficial relationship, certainly beneficial for Motorola. I mean, as it tries to kind of compete in relevancy with the Apples and the Samsungs of the world. I mean, Apple obviously has had Siri for many, many years. Samsung just bought Viv, which is the voice startup from Chicago and Dag Kitlos. So the big phone makers are going all in on voice, and Motorola has kind of sort of used whatever Google has, and now it's going to go all in with Alexa.
I think Amazon wins here. Like, yes, Motorola isn't as ubiquitous as Samsung or Apple. I mean, if you watched the Oscars last night, it felt like the Oscars was brought to you by Samsung. Right. It was everywhere. But Motorola is still, you know, has a significant percentage of the global smartphone marketplace. And now all of a sudden, Amazon is there. I was engaging with Alexa this weekend. I was down in Austin, and my sister in law has an Alexa, and you know, you ask it questions, you have fun, and then it says things like, hey, would you like to upgrade to you know, advance that, you know, right, so right. Like, it'll sneak in a little sale, and now all of a sudden Alexa, through this relationship, just accelerated its real estate.
So you just flew in from Austin this morning. Are your arms tired?
Oh, Steve, classic.
Will Flanagan and Jim Belkin.
I took motorized luggage all the way up here.
I wish I'd seen that. Okay, that's Will and Jim from Chicago. You know, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to New Zealand, just the three of us. It'll be fun. Well, we'll bring you two. It's 12:21. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're kicking around the world of innovation and technology in Chicago with the Inno boys from Chicago Inno, Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke here. Okay, so what's this about New Zealand? Is raiding Chicago?
Yeah, they're raiding Chicago and pretty much every other major U.S. startup hub. They are putting together, Wellington, New Zealand, is putting together sort of a citywide initiative to take tech talent from the U.S. and bring it down under. Their program called Look See Wellington is trying to bring 100 people from around the U.S.
Can all you do that with an paid. Accent? Look-see.
Oh, look-see. No. That's Australian. I'll pass on that.
I've been in this business a long time. Never try. Yeah. If anyone ever asks, just don't do it.
I give you 10%.
Because it's going to sound yeah. Jamaican. Yeah. If I learn one thing about now, accents.
I think I started to go a little Scottish a little bit, too. But anyway, they're trying
to
bring...
Oh, can you do a Scottish accent?
Hey, learn my lesson with the New Zealand. 100 folks, all expenses paid trip with pre-arranged job interviews. Wellington, home to companies like Peter Jackson's Weta Digital, online accountancy, Xero, and some other folks.
Well, that's a long way away.
Really long way away.
What's the appeal? I mean, unless you want to go somewhere a long way away.
The appeal is that you can build cool tech everywhere, and there is more tech than technologists, and maybe they'll get lucky and they'll capture the adventurous spirit. You know, if you think about all of the technologists that flock to Denver, because that is the U.S. tech hub where I can engage with mountains and you know, rafting and go crazy. This is like that, but on steroids. Wellington, there's a really adventure lifestyle there, so... Yeah, if you're into tech and you want to go have an adventure, it's a pretty cool opportunity.
Why not? I was telling Bill and Wendy about this startup. Is it pronounced Satira?
Yeah.
Which they want to be the LinkedIn for comics, right? Or become the booking agent. It's a Chicago startup. Who's going to tell me about that?
Yeah, so we wrote about Satira last week, and really interesting idea. Kind of the goal is to be a social network first, kind of connect comedians digitally, but then ultimately sort of become their booking agent for them. So not only will this be a place where you can meet other comedians, kind of get a foot in the door that way, it'll be a way to book jobs, whether it's, you know, a night, the stand-up night, whether it's on a cruise ship, whether it's for a commercial.
Well, okay, so I think of this community as competing against itself, but if they're all in one spot, then what, they're sharing info on other gigs? Or?
Well, I mean, it's like any industry, I guess, are all graphic designers competing against one another? Kind of, but there's enough of a market to sustain hundreds and thousands of graphic designers, and this is a really interesting trend in the internet in general, this splintering of communities online. So if you picture Facebook, Facebook is everything for everyone. Because it's so broad, it's really hard to provide value to these niche communities. So you have Satira for, you know, which is the LinkedIn for comedy, but there is the LinkedIn for graphic designers, there's the LinkedIn for hardware makers. You find you know, all of these kind of micro communities popping up, because the more niche they can get, the more value and specific they can be.
How does she make money?
So what they'll end up doing is charging the folks that are going to be booking gigs. So they're going to charge the companies to sort of use their talent pool to find, you know, sort of diverse comedians. So rather, it's really opening up. You know, if I've got a commercial, I'm looking for a very specific person. This is an access to a talent pool that company's really never seen before.
They're a digital agent as well. So think about how an agent would make money placing comics and booking, you know, their slots and venues. That's what Satir will be doing.
All right, tell me about NERC. A company that will bring contraception to your door. Now, when I think of that, I'm thinking of a commercial, you know, it's someone who needs something in a hurry. But that's really not what we're talking about here, right?
No, it's a San Francisco-based telemedicine platform. It allows users to answer a couple questionnaires, upload insurance information, have a quick instant message exchange with a licensed doctor, and contraceptives arrive via mail 2 days later. So it's, Steve, we've talked a lot about the Uber for X model, and this is Uber for birth control.
Why is it that they're delivering things for which you need a prescription, right?
Correct. So, yeah. So it all works through your insurance and through a doctor. And basically what they're really targeting are kind of areas that have contraceptive deserts. So, I mean, not everybody lives right around the corner from a Walgreens. Right. And so there are people in rural areas.
I was around my apartment for about 10 years.
Yeah. So there are people in rural areas that really have to travel a long way. And so really they're making this way more efficient.
Yeah, okay. And I hope they succeed, but I'm just trying to figure it out because I get my prescription medication by the mail now through my employer. So even if you live in a rural area where, well, I don't know. I mean, I've lived in rural areas. They're not that far from a pharmacy. If you're picking up your monthly prescription, why is it that this would work when the regular mail order or the regular monthly prescription pickup wouldn't?
Well, why does Amazon work? You can walk around and get paper towels and tissues, but Amazon works because convenience, whether it's a huge convenience or a minor convenience, matters. And this is a convenience for another category of items. But the reason why this is, you know, you not on Amazon or is kind of unique is because it requires that telemedicine element. You need to have that instant message feature with the doctor. So the way that you can get connected and have these questions answered and verified, that's what makes it unique and rather new.
And they just launched, right, earlier this month.
They launched in Illinois. It's their sixth market, and it takes a little while because obviously there's certain laws around drug delivery, so they had to make sure that this was this state had the laws that were up to date on.
Is it a political? Do they have a political slant?
I mean, they are. They have somewhat of a political stand. They're kind of really not making an effort to hide where they're at politically. They have a code you can use for some money off. Their code is Alternative Facts in all caps. So, they are sort of going head to head against the folks who would be interested in repealing the Affordable Care Act and some other health care
issues. So interesting to me politically if that's what they're selling, and then they're selling to, in many ways, rural areas that, you know, like the facts that they're hearing. You know, it's like there's a little bit of a conflict there.
Yeah, 100%. So right now it is, you know, for those with health insurance, birth control is likely free. But if a customer prefers to pay out of pocket, prices are going to start at $15 per month. Again, I think it comes down to convenience. Yes, there is that. There is the political element here, but everything is going to become easier to get.
Will Flanagan is the general manager of Chicago Inno, Jim Dahlke as well. Where do people read more from you guys?
ChicagoInno.com. Subscribe to The Beat, which is our daily newsletter.
Great to see you. We'll see you again next week.
Sounds good.
It's the Biz Lunch on WGN. Thank you, Ryan Burrow. It's Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, last week, remember, we had Dina Shanker on. She writes for Bloomberg, and she had talked about the American Psychologist Association, something like that. And they came out with their survey, and it showed that we were a little more stressed out than we had been. They do the survey every year. They have for 10 years, and every year for 10 years, we're becoming a little more calm, and this year, not so much. Well, they released a follow-up study to that as well. And one of the things they say is that we're way too involved with social media, that is adding to our stress. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune, and she depends on us all being addicted to social media for her work.
I do. So I thank you all in advance for being very stressed out and allowing me to keep my job.
How about that, though? You know, I'm not kidding you. This is going to be a focus for me because I have my phone always in my hands or close to me. Even if I'm reading a book or whatever, sitting on the arm of the chair next to me.
And it's hard. You can't get through more than like three paragraphs before you pick up your phone and
start
scrolling.
I really do. And you know what I do? It's the stupidest thing. I'll stop and play a game of solitaire. You know, so I'm actually reading less because I have this phone sitting next to me. And so I'm not going to cut off access to it because I still want to. If I hear a text coming in or a phone call coming in, I want to hear it. But I'm not going to have it close to me in the evening so that I'm not always just playing with it. Because the studies, they really do say that it has an impact.
Oh, yeah. And not only are you, you know, losing your concentration, you can't get more than three paragraphs in your book, you're also losing your sleep. Because I know I'm guilty of this. I'll sit here and, oh, let me just clear these notifications on my phone and scroll through Instagram. And then 45 minutes later, I'm in my bed on my phone not sleeping.
Right. And so there's a beauty of it because you and I both get, you know, hundreds of emails a day. I'm assuming you do as well.
Yes.
And so it's like a video game itself, just deleting, keeping up with the deletion. So
oh, yeah.
You think you're doing yourself a favor, but you're probably not.
Correct, yeah. And this is actually one of the things that the American Psychological Association advised is to kind of keep your habits in check. You know, take breaks from your phone, set guidelines, and then evaluate your usage and see where you can improve so that you're not one of those incredibly stressed out Americans.
I was looking at some of these numbers. So on a 10-point scale, constant checkers reported an average stress level of 5.3. For the rest of the Americans, it's 4.4.
So a full point higher, 10% more stress.
For people who check their email, their work email on their days off, they're at a 6.
So don't check your work email on your day off.
Put it away, enjoy yourself, watch or listen to the radio.
Yes.
How about that? Or if you're a CEO or a CMO, I would imagine, you're checking Donald Trump's Twitter feed to see if you've been singled out, right?
Yes.
He's been doing it a lot. I mean, maybe slow down a little bit. I don't know. But whether it's Carrier or Chicago-based Boeing or Caterpillar, I think, was the subject of
one. Nordstrom.
Nordstrom. He is doing individual sort of, I don't know. They used to call it jawboning, I guess.
Yeah, and this is kind of like the 21st century version of jawboning is, you know, when a politician uses their influence to affect how companies conduct business, and that seems to be one of Donald Trump's favorite things to do. So, so there's actually kind of been more of a pressing need for companies, their PR teams, to have these responses ready should it happen to them.
So they're developing like a rapid Trump response
RTTRS.
I don't know. But they actually are coming up with these game plans, right? There's a law firm, I think that you gave me some of the copy from them, where they've developed a strategy for when it happens.
Yeah, and this isn't exactly new. People have been kind of talking about this ever since the inauguration, or I guess even since the election. What do you do when your brand becomes this focus for Donald Trump, for the sitting U.S.
Right.
president?
It's funny. I mean, you know, crisis management isn't new, but not when you're under attack from your own president.
On social media, yeah. And so this law firm recently came out with a book, and they said that they had been pressured from clients to kind of give some insight, you know, like what happens when our company inadvertently becomes, you know, under scrutiny from the president? How do we protect against this? And so there's actually a law firm that has released a book about how you can handle social media crises.
Well, the ones I'm thinking of, you know, their stocks would take a pretty quick immediate hit and then they would tend to recover through the end of the day. I mean, so that if you, by that measure, you can measure it that way, but that's only one. There's public perception. There's, you know, people reading the newspapers and all of that too.
Right. And then, you know, these are just like L.L. Bean and Nordstrom retailers. But, you know, what happens if it's a kind of a private company, or what happens if it's, you know, some kind of a nonprofit? I know newspapers get it a lot from Donald Trump.
The enemies of the American people,
the failing media, the New York Times, CNN, BuzzFeed, all of them.
Nobody watches Morning Joe, things like that. I would imagine there can't be really a unified strategy, but what are their recommendations? How do you handle it?
Well, I haven't read the book, so I couldn't tell you.
Make something up. No. We're not going to read it.
It did give a little bit of some insight. Brands usually, they take their time and put together a response, and with something like this, you can't wait on it. You can't get a pool together of people to deliberate on language. You have to react immediately. And so some of the advice is, you know, do you say something? Do you not say something? And these are just kind of things that an individual company needs to consider.
Another thing, you know, they're talking about bringing when the restrictions on immigration or on travel, and we've got the 7 countries and we've got the refugees and all of that. Aside from the politics of that, one of the things that they want to do is they want to see if the people coming into the country have connections to questionable other people or terror groups or things like that. So there's this, it's not quite a formal proposal, right? But there's this notion that they might start asking people coming into the country who just want to visit for their Facebook passwords and things like that?
Yeah, this was something that Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly pitched, was requiring visitors to give over not their handles, but their actual passwords. And so this brings up, I mean, I've had Facebook for a decade, so 10 years worth of private messages and private group conversations. And
under no suspicion, just coming in to visit the country.
Right, just coming in to visit the country. And so it's kind of interesting. It's obviously a huge invasion of privacy, but it's also, you know, I can make a fake Twitter account.
Right.
That one's not me. That one's me. You know, it's kind of ambiguous. Or you can temporarily deactivate your Facebook and then, you know, I don't have a Facebook. And, you know, some studies have actually shown, you know, some of these countries that Donald Trump had issued the Muslim majority ban on, they actually don't have high percentages of Facebook users anyway, at least nowhere compared to here in the U.S.
Right. Well, so it is an interesting thing where he's like, well, this is logical. Let's look at this. But it's silly if you think of it, because as you said, the day before I leave for the country, I just create a fake Facebook account.
Right, or you just deactivate yours or, you know, something like that. And then it's also, what if you have two-step verification on? So you give someone your password and they put it in, and then it says, please enter the code from your cell phone in order to proceed. And, you know,
all right, so there's that. We're not going to do that. We're going to walk around with our Snapchat spectacles and create Snapchat stories.
And hopefully the government won't get our passwords for these.
But I keep saying Snapchat. Is it still Snapchat or is it just Snap?
It is Snapchat. Snap Inc. is the parent company that owns Snapchat.
And Snap Inc. started selling their spectacles online today.
I'm not sure if it was today, but it was very recently.
Okay. And these are glasses that you wear and you walk around looking like a complete goof. But you can take video just by tapping your phone or your eyeglasses.
Yeah, and you have to give them credit. The glasses don't look half as ridiculous as Google Glass.
Well, that's true, but I don't know if that's a standard. But so they're for sale now. Anyone can buy them.
Yes, and these were originally sold in little Snap vending machines. I think there was one over in Skokie not too long ago that sold out in a matter of hours. But now they are available online, so you don't have to resale on eBay for $900 these glasses that someone in Skokie picked up. You can go to spectacles.com and buy your own for the low, low price of $130.
And they're not making money on this yet either.
They are not. No, it's kind of more of a novelty thing at this point. And, you know, you got to experiment with stuff and see if it takes off. So this is definitely an interesting experiment.
Randy Schaefer writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by today,
Thank
Randy.
You for having me.
It's 12:52. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. We're going to put on our costume. Mary Hickey Paniotou is here. She is the owner of Chicago Costume Company. How did I do in that? I think I did all right, didn't I?
Good job.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
So are you a costume wearer?
I do wear costumes.
Do you?
I do.
Is that what drew you to the business?
Kind of. I think my love of sewing and my love of theater is what got me started in it when I was in high school.
So what do you make of people who are afraid to put on a costume? Because you're talking to one.
I see. Well, I try to counsel them that, you know, you can be a lot of things in your life and you should go to that place inside of you of that thing that you never were or that you always aspired to be and make that your costume.
I think it is sort of some sort of weird psychological thing that maybe that draws people to costumes, but also that repels people who are afraid of it.
It's pretending to be something you're not. And if you're a really honest person and your honesty is very deep within you, sometimes it's hard to pretend to be something else.
All right, so let's talk about the business. Your son was in here around the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
You do a pretty mean, ugly sweater kind
we of do, yes.
business around for Christmas time. I would imagine Halloween is the big season.
Halloween is a big season, closely followed by Christmas, and then coming up on right now the carnival season, and then Purim is coming up next. That's another big holiday.
Tell me about Purim. I don't know.
Purim is a holiday that is the precursor, in my opinion, of carnival,
uh-huh.
because it's a Jewish holiday. It's where a Jewish family might not indulge in Halloween because it's a Christian or
sure,
carnival
sure.
because it's Christian, but the Jewish holiday of Purim celebrates Queen Esther and her rise to power within the Jewish hierarchy. And I'm going to misquote here a little
bit. No, I didn't. You didn't have to give me a religion lesson.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But the the Testament says, you know, dress in clothes that are not yours and drink until you can't stand to celebrate that holiday. So the Jewish people get dressed up in costumes and get very drunk.
So it is their Halloween.
Yes.
In a way. Well, I did not know about that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you came in for that alone. So Mardi Gras now, St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's is big too. It's a one-day thing, so it's not really a season.
How much of your business is... You're like guys like me coming off the street, or how much of it is, you know, businesses or things like that?
I would say 60-70% retail right off the street. I've got a Halloween party. I've got a work thing. You know, I'm supposed to wear this. I've got, you know, we're doing a thing at work where a team building exercise and we all need to wear funny hats, or we're going out for this murder mystery party, or a friend's getting married and it's a costume wedding, kind of thing.
Do you have a lot of competition?
There's several places here in the city that a person can go and get costumes.
Are you the best?
I absolutely agree.
Okay. So when I knew you were coming in, what I really wanted to talk to you about was, well, one of the things was this mascot business too. So what's the name of the mascot business?
I do business for mascots under the name Amazing Mascots.
Amazing Mascots.
And we create and manufacture professional sport team mascots.
How many little mascots or big mascots do you have running around in the world?
Hundreds.
Really?
Just hundreds.
So
yes.
If I came to you and I said, you know, I have a pickup basketball team and we're 0-20 and we'd like to develop a mascot, how does that work?
Well, you tell me what you want, what you're doing, right. What's your character, what you're feeling about your character, who you want it to appeal to, and we come up with some sketches and we make our presentation and you... Go on from there.
And once you have the sketches, are you the person who then physically builds it?
I do physically build it. I have a whole staff of people that, you know, assist me in that. But, yeah, we do. We take the sketch and then we have to. A lot of times you have a cartoon character and those aren't proportioned to fit people. And we have to work to cheat it in a little bit, you know, because we people have arms and legs and torsos that are standard. And, you know, we don't have skinny legs and fat bellies and short arms. Many characters have that.
So you're building an outside and you're building an inside, too.
Absolutely. A lot of it is engineering. And when I say professional sport team, it's because these people have to perform. Think of Benny the Bull, for instance. Everybody in Chicago knows Benny the Bull.
Have you worked with Benny?
Absolutely. Yeah. He's one of our best clients.
Is he a good guy?
He's a very nice
for a
person.
Bull?
You know, they changed performers. We had one performer for 13 years, and then they changed last year to another performer.
Yeah, I meant the Bull. I don't really care about the guy inside. I don't want any scoop.
Okay. But he's a very athletic character. He started out less athletic, and now he's become more fit, and he does more things. He tumbles, he jumps, he jumps on a trampoline and he puts a ball in the basket. And all of these are very difficult things for most people, much less wearing a costume that inhibits your movement and your vision.
So when you develop a costume, do you develop it? Obviously, then you have to develop it almost with the wearer in mind and what the wearer is going
to be
doing.
It has to fit that wear. You know, that helmet inside of that head has to fit that person's head, and their eyes have to be aligned with where we've created the vision in the head.
What if I wanted to create a mascot just to go to the farmer's market on Saturdays? Could you do that for me?
Absolutely. We make some for farmer's markets.
Do you?
As well, yes.
What's the mascot go for?
Our mascots range in price from about $4,500 to $10,000.
Okay. And I was on your website too, because it's great because it's got inspiration, design, and then cleaning tips.
Yeah.
It's not easy to clean a mascot.
No, and
head.
You have to keep them clean. You know, if you're working a game, you're sweating a lot, and that suit gets really funky after a time. And if you're a university, you might not have the same person in it every single time, and you might not have the next person who really wants to get in it after somebody else is worn.
Hickey Paniotu. How do people find more information?
ChicagoCostume.com or amazing-mascots.com.
Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You can take that helmet off now. What is that you're wearing?